For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
We're going to talk about Lot. Lot was Abraham's nephew, and he is the focus of this part of Genesis. And as we've been going through here, our focus has been on faith, which is basically trust. Trusting God and trusting ourselves to God, depending on Him to keep His promises. And that's been our focus. And what we've had in Abraham is a positive example for the most part. He wasn't perfect. But in this book, Abraham for us is supposed to be a positive example of the life of faith. That's why in other parts of the Bible, Abraham is called the father of our faith. But, you know, when you're trying to understand a concept, like if you're in a class and you're introduced to a new idea, it helps to not just hear the positive definition of faith or the positive example of faith lived out, but to fully understand it, it also helps to see the negative side, what it looks like to not live the life of faith. And that's what Lot does for us. Okay, Lot helps us get our brain around just a deeper understanding of faith, because his life is all about what not to do if you want to live the life of faith. One way to think about this is thinking about Lot as a foil. I'm not talking about tin foil or something like that. Foil in the sense of, like, if you read a movie or you read a novel, a lot of times there is a foil in the plot. There's a main character, and the foil is somebody who's kind of a contrast to the behavior and the character qualities of the protagonist, of the main character. So just so you get a sense of what I mean, like in the Lord of the Rings movies, you've got two guys. You've got Boromir, and there's Boromir, and the first guy is Aragorn. Aragorn is a central character in the Lord of the Rings series. He goes on to be a king, does a lot of things, but they really start in the same place. They're both sons of men. They're both on a mission. They're both part of the fellowship of the ring. They both want to do the right thing, but over the course of the movie, their paths diverge. And it has a lot to do with how they handle temptation. Aragorn was able to face some very tempting times, but Boromir gave in. And at the end of the movie, you see Aragorn going into the jaws of this battle, leading these armies to victory, basically saving the world. That's the way Aragorn's path ends. But Boromir winds up being a threat to the people around him, and he bleeds out in a battle against some orcs. And his last words were, "I have failed." Very stark contrast. And so that sense of a foil, where one character, Lot, is a total contrast to Abraham. That's what we're going to see. Because just like with these two guys, Abraham and Lot had the same starting point. They were from the same family. They also were in the same fellowship of believers. Remember, both Abraham and Lot were in a community of people who believed in God Most High. And they both were made right in God's eyes by their faith. If you look in the end of the New Testament, it talks about righteous Lot. Now that may strike you as odd once we get into this story, because he was anything but a righteous liver. But what it's saying here is, at one point, like Abraham, Lot entrusted himself to God. He put his faith in God, called out to God for forgiveness, and was made right in God's eyes. So both Abraham and Lot are starting out in the very same place, but then over the course of these two chapters, actually chapter 13 all the way through 19 in Genesis, you see the paths of these two men diverge, and you see them wind up in two very different places. The outcome of their life is totally different. So what I'm going to try to do is I'm just going to tell the story of Lot. And as we go through, I want to focus on the contrast between the vital faith that we see in Abraham's life and the compromise and the depravity that Lot pursued. That simple contrast. I'm just going to highlight this as we go through the story. The other thing we're going to talk about, and it's sprinkled all the way through. I mean, in every chapter we look at, like breadcrumbs, you see these references to despite Lot getting more and more depraved, you see God moving towards him with undeserved compassion. That's what the Bible calls grace. And I'm going to try to highlight that as we go through this. So let's keep going. Let's just start into the story. Remember, they started out together. Abraham and Lot did. Actually, Lot, when he was little, he lost his father. And he became attached to Abraham's household. So it's not surprising that we would read in Genesis 12 that Abraham took Sarah, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and they set out for the land of Canaan. So they started out in Haran, up in the top there, and went south in gradual stages until they got to Canaan, which is the promised land. And so this, you know, they had a lot of time spent. Lot got to see Abraham worshiping the God Most High at different stages in this journey. Lot understood the ways of God. But then, as time went on, things changed. Both of these men raised livestock. So when they came into the land of Canaan, they were raising livestock and incredibly successful. Their herds were multiplying. They had so many animals to take care of. They reached a point where they couldn't stay together. They had to split apart from each other so that their animals could graze. And Abraham was very generous. He told Lot, look, if you go to the left, I'll take the land to the right. If you go to the right, I'll take the land to the left. Whatever, you know, just whatever you want to do. And so it says, while they were together discussing parting ways, that Lot lifted up his eyes and he saw the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered. The garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. It was beautiful, verdant, filled with awesome grazing land. And Lot looked at all that. He surveyed everything there and he realized, I can make some money here. There's a huge economic opportunity for me and for my future family. This is definitely where I want to head. And so, totally enamored with this, understanding the financial implications, he headed down to this valley. And Abraham, we find out, went a different direction. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and they separated from each other. And Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley. And he moved his tents as far as Sodom. Sodom. Now, you've probably heard of Sodom, as in Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, it's still true today that most people know that these towns are associated with wickedness. And it was certainly true back then. The author lets us know the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly. And you'll see they are. And sinners against the Lord. So as Lot is kind of working his way down out of the mountains and into the valley and moving toward this economic opportunity, he's doing it with his eyes open. He's walking into the jaws of a spiritually dangerous place, and he's willing to do it because his highest priority is getting wealthy. And so we see that's what happens. He moves down into this area. Abraham, meanwhile, doesn't settle. He doesn't just stay in one place. God had told him to keep moving, to keep trusting his provision to take care of Abraham, his provision to protect Abraham. That's what Abraham did. He kept moving. He kept trusting God. But Lot, we read, he actually settled here. You know, he was in tents. Tents are mobile. That's how tents work. But he never left this area. For years after this, he became, over time, gradually and more deeply entrenched in the life and the culture of this area until he was a fixture in Sodom. And so that's what, you know, remember, what are we trying to do? We're trying to look at these contrasts, right? This is a huge contrast. We see Abraham trusting God, continuing to move, and Lot settling in, even though he knows he's risking spiritual disaster. Now, at this point, and we covered this a few weeks ago, kings from the east came into this region and they attacked and plundered the city of Sodom. And we read, you can see that's where the battle happened. And it says in Genesis 14:12, these invaders took Lot when they came in to attack Sodom. They took Lot, Abraham's nephew, and his possessions, and they departed. Why? Because he was living in Sodom. So he's not just in a tent in the suburbs, out in the fields around Sodom. Knowing what a wicked, dark place that is, he decided, and I don't know, it was probably gradual. Probably made a couple trips in to pick up some groceries or to pay a bill or to meet a merchant. But at some point he went in there in Sodom and he looked at the thick walls. He looked at the abundant food. He looked at the prosperity. And he planted a flag in the ground and said, you know what? I could get used to this place. I know there's some shady things happening here. But there's a lot about this city to like. And so he moved in the city. That's why when these invaders came in and depopulated Sodom and looted it, one of the people swept up in all this was Lot. That's why he got carried up in all this. And so we read that after the people of Sodom, including Lot, are captured and being carried north by these invaders, it says a fugitive came and told Abraham about it. If you look on a map, so the invaders are headed north, and a fugitive is able to break free from this big mob of armies, and he goes straight to Abraham for help by the oaks of Mamre. And this is really, I think, something worth pausing to think about. This fugitive knew exactly where Abraham was. And if he knew where Abraham was, Lot did too. And here's something you should keep in mind as we go through this. At any point in this story, in all of what we've read, Lot knew the way back. He knew the way back to people who followed God. He knew where to find Abraham. He knew the way back to his old life of believing in and following the God Most High. Just like this fugitive knew where Abraham was. Well, Abraham finds out from the fugitive that Lot is literally, you know, going by him, swept away by this army. And so he chases the invaders down. They have a big battle. Abraham wins. They rescue Lot. They come back down this way. So Abraham is victorious. It's incredible. He's rescued not just Lot, not just the people of Sodom, but everything they own. And as they're traveling back past what is today Jerusalem, two really important things happen in this story. And it's, you got to remember too, not just Lot, but the people of Sodom who were rescued witnessed both of these events. The first thing they see is Abraham absolutely refusing to benefit from the wealth of Sodom in any way. He's offered by the king of Sodom, why don't you take all this booty from our battle? And Abraham's like, I don't want a penny. Keep it for yourself. He's very clear. I want no connection to you and to Sodom whatsoever. Lot sees this. He sees that strong reaction. We also see this mysterious priest, Melchizedek, proclaiming, praising God Most High for empowering Abraham to rescue Lot and the people of Sodom. I mean, the people of Sodom had to come to terms with the fact that their king was weak, but the God Most High was powerful enough to deliver them. And so you've got to remember, this city had a witness to who God was. They saw the power of God to rescue them from disaster. And at this point, I just think about this. Think about Abraham and Lot's life together. This is a key moment. Lot has a choice to make. You know, on the one hand, he could recognize, you know, Abraham raised me. He took me in when my father died. He taught me the ways of the Lord. When I needed him, when I was held captive by this invading army, he dropped everything to come and get me. This is a man who loves me and who's under God's blessing. Obviously, I should stay close to him. But then on the other hand, he's looking at all that money and all those people and friends of his from Sodom. And he's thinking about that lifestyle that he enjoyed, that lifestyle he could have again. And as he's weighing this out, he goes up to his uncle and he says, "Uncle Abraham, you've done a lot for me, but I'm headed to Sodom." That's a big deal. That's one, you know, there are certain decisions in our life that set our trajectory for a while. This was one of those trajectory setting decisions. Yeah, he returns to Sodom, returns to the depraved lifestyle of Sodom. And you see, the wheels really come off in Lot's life at this point. So 20 years pass. That's a lot of time, 2 decades. During those decades, Abraham continues to stay on the move. Lot remains in Sodom, and he builds a life there. He has a wife, presumably from Sodom. Him and his wife have daughters. Presumably, they were born and raised right there. There's no evidence that they were there before he went to Sodom. Big divergence, right? Abraham's staying tight with the Lord. And, you know, just think about it at this point. Remember how this whole thing is flowing out. Lot's compromised faith isn't looking that bad. I mean, he's got a wife. He's got kids. He's in a prosperous city. He's got a house. He's got wealth out the wazoo. He, you know, by our standards, that guy's, yeah, it's the American dream. He's hit the jackpot. Remember what's up with Abraham? At this point, it doesn't look so good. He's not able to have a kid. Him and his wife are still childless. They don't own a square inch of real estate anywhere in Canaan. They're breaking down their tents in the morning and setting them up at night, moving around like nomads. Really, I think you could get to the point where, you know, if, and this is part of the tension you're supposed to feel as you read Genesis, is, wow, is this even worth it to put your full trust in God and live a life of vital faith? I don't know. Sure doesn't look like it to me. This is where the story pivots, because there's more to tell here. And the jury's still out on this question, and it will be definitively answered. But for now, just remember these themes. We're gonna pivot to chapter 18 and 19. We're going to keep contrasting Abraham's faith with Lot's compromise. We're going to keep looking for those breadcrumbs of grace. And we're going to really see the theme of grace come into play here big time. Lot's hanging out at home. 2 angels come to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and he bowed down with his face to the ground. Okay, now let's just pause here for a second. You know that Sodom is associated with a lot of evil. What evil in particular? One thing that you know you hear people talk about is it was sexually immoral. They were doing a lot of sexually deviant things, and you'll see it's true. And you know, it kind of kills me when Christians get all narrow-minded about sexual immorality. And this is all they talk about with Sodom. Because Sodom was guilty of many more things than sexual immorality. They were guilty of pride and gluttony and laziness. And they were doing all that while poor and needy people suffered right outside their door. Oh, you want something to eat? Slam! These guys lived a life of luxury while people around them were starving. Huge economic inequalities. And so, you know, you've got this narrow, scowling Christian talking about the sexually immoral sodomites while they're hip deep in Western materialism and completely indifferent to the poor. That's BS, man. That is, we are not representing what was wrong in this city if we just limit it to sins we never do. Everybody here, to varying degrees, is guilty of the kinds of things that the city is ultimately judged for. And we shouldn't forget that as we think about this. Now, where was Lot when the angels showed up into Sodom? Sitting in the gate. Sitting in the gate. Now, that tells us a lot. The gate of the city, that's where the power brokers sat. That's where the decision makers sat. That's where city councilmen pronounced judgments over this. That's where people came to get their disputes adjudicated. This is a position of power. He's made it. He's not just in Sodom. He's one of the people that shape what happens there. You know, at one point he was kind of walking in the region and he thought, I'll put a tent here. And then at one point he was standing and he realized, no, I really like this area. I'm going to plant a flag and I'm going to dwell in this region. I'm going to move into the city. And then we see him sitting in a position of power, sitting in the gate. Now, what is this? This is the gradual progression that's associated with sin and depravity. Think about, like, you need to get a new dog, and he sleeps in a crate, and that doesn't work. So then he's, like, sleeping on a couch somewhere, and that doesn't work. And eventually he's sleeping in your bed. You know, it's just this, it's a bad trend. It just seems like pet owners, just eventually you hear, they're just, like, their dog's kicking him in the middle of the night, and somehow that's okay with them. I could never do that. It blows my mind. But that's the trend here. He, kind of like a tractor beam, just can't look away from Sodom. And he gets drawn in deeper and deeper. And Psalm 1, it says, how blessed is the man who doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the path of sinners, or sit in the seat of scoffers. Gradually developing a settled familiarity with sin. That's what we see in the life of Lot. That's a huge trend in this book. Very different than the life of Abraham. It says in verse 2, these angels show up. They come up to Sodom in the evening as it's getting dark. And Lot says, behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house. Spend the night. And there's an urgency here as he's talking. He's like, wash your feet. Then you can rise early, really early in the morning. You can get out of here even before the dawn breaks. And then you can go on your way. And they're like, the angels are like, nah, we'd really like to stay here. We want to spend the night in the square. And Lot's like, oh, God, no. Bad idea. You know, Lot knows what the men of Sodom are like. Lot knows what the men of Sodom do when there's new flesh in town. And Lot is very worried that if he doesn't get these angels under his roof, something horrific is going to happen. You can just sense the tension building as you go through this part of the chapter. So Lot urges them strongly, you know, get in my house. So they turn aside to him and entered his house. And he prepares a feast for them and he baked unleavened bread and they ate. Weird, isn't it? These are angels, but they appear as men. They can eat like us. It happens many places in the Bible. So they're hanging out with Lot in his house because he's urgently trying to get them in there. And it says, before they lay down for the night, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house, both young and old, all the people from every quarter. So this is like every guy in town, young, old, everybody. And they called to Lot and said to him, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we may have relations with them. Now, some interpreters, they read this and they argue, well, they just wanted to chat with the angels. If that's true, if all they wanted to do is just talk to him, then why does Lot go out to the doorway, shut the door, and say, please, my brothers, don't act wickedly? Lot knew what they were there to do. They were there to gang rape his guests. That's exactly what they were there to do. And just amazingly, look what he says to him. He says, my brothers, what kind of man calls a mob of gang rapists brothers? Just like, Lot, what happened to you? It's unbelievable, and it just gets worse. He says, behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations with men. Please let me bring them out to you and do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men, inasmuch as they've come under the shelter of my roof. I hope you can see the contrast here between Lot and Abraham. Yeah, I have two daughters. This is unconscionable. Just angry to think that he would do this. It's stunning, you know. It's a contrast because Abraham, he risked everything. He dropped everything to go rescue Lot. Now Lot's in danger and he's turning his own daughters over to the people attacking him. That is depravity. We've moved a little bit further down the scale here when we look at stuff like this. And it's really sad, too, because, you know, Lot had spent a lot of time trying to ingratiate himself with the culture in Sodom, trying to be one of them. Even though they knew he was from somewhere else, they knew he had a past with that Abraham guy who's wandering around worshiping the God Most High. But he wanted to be in there, in the gate, in the middle of the culture of the city. And it says, when Lot wouldn't let them have what they wanted, it says, the men in the town said to Lot, stand aside. Furthermore, they said, this one, talking about Lot, he came in as an alien. Already he's acting like a judge. Now we're going to treat you, Lot, worse than them. And so they pressed hard against Lot, and it came near to break the door. And this is another thing you get. You know, when you're living a life of compromise, you know that, you know, you are different. You know God, but you're in situations where no one has any regard for God. It never feels quite right. You always feel like an alien. These guys never accepted Lot. They never took him in. Well, it says the angels, they realize we're going to have to intervene. The men, these angels, they reached out their hands. They brought Lot into the house with them, and they shut the door. And they struck the men who were in the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great. Now, you would think, if you were out for a night of gang raping, that being struck blind might deter you, and, you know, maybe it'd be time to go home at that point, right? I'm just saying. It says that they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. And this is the way it is. We're in the grip of a powerful addiction. It's not rational. They're driven by a need to satisfy their lust, and they won't be denied. Yeah. And remember, with his eyes wide open, this is where Lot decided, I want to live and raise a family. It says, the two men said to Lot, whom else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whoever else you have in the city. These angels are like, bring them out of the place. We're about to destroy this place because their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So God's been hearing about this place. He's been hearing, God knows how many people that have been mistreated like this mob wants to mistreat the angels. And that call has come up to him. And he's like, I can't just look the other way and ignore this. And he deputizes these angels. I want you to look into this, and I want you to deal with what's happening here. So Lot went out, having heard this warning, and he spoke to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters. And he said, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he appeared to them, to his sons-in-law, to be jesting. They're like, whatever, Lot. Come on, dude. Apparently, Lot had never really talked much about the Lord. So when he tried to get serious about it, they didn't take him seriously. They're like, yeah, whatever. Another, Lot's just off his rocker. And we don't know what happened to these guys. They more than almost certainly were swept up in the city's destruction. It says, and this is amazing too. So this is in the evening back here, right? The angels have said, get out of the city. It's about to be destroyed. So what does Lot do? He sleeps on it. He's like, I think I'm going to just get a good night's rest. And then when morning dawned, the angels urged him again. He's like, they're like, up, get your wife, get your daughters, or you're going to be swept away in the punishment of the city. And even after that, after sleeping on it and having an angel in your face saying, let's go, he hesitated. Why did he hesitate? Well, I think this is the stupefying effect of living in Sodom. You ever like painted your basement walls with a new coating of like water sealing? And then you're 2 or 3 hours into painting, you go up to get a drink and you realize, I'm completely overcome by fumes. I had no idea. You know, it's the same thing here. It didn't happen all at once. But, I mean, he is unable to hear the urgent pleas of angels in his face because he's been so numbed by being part of this culture. It's hard to believe it was this bad. So the men, and this is a breadcrumb of compassion. I mean, they've already told him, the city's going to be blown away. Leave while you can. That's compassionate. Even as Lot's getting more depraved, they're compassionate. But look at this. It says these angels, they seized his hand. And they seized the hand of his wife and the hands of his two daughters. It's only four people. And it says the compassion of the Lord was upon him, upon Lot, and they brought him out. They literally, these angels had to drag Lot and his wife and daughters, had to drag them out of the city. And when they had brought them outside, one said, escape for your life. Don't look behind you and don't stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains or you'll be swept away. And even here, this is unbelievable. Even after all of this, Lot's like, well, wait a minute. After this undeserved grace and compassion, after physically being dragged out, he says to them, oh no, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight. And if you've magnified your loving kindness, which you've shown to me by saving my life, but I can't escape to the mountains, for if a disaster overtakes me there, I'll die. Now behold, this town's near enough to flee to, and it's small. Please let me go there. Is it not small that my life may be saved? It's almost like he's babbling. You know, this is about as close to a cliffhanger scene in an action movie as you get in ancient literature. I mean, literally, like flaming balls of sulfur are headed for the city. And ancient readers like, Lot, get out! Quit talking! Quit, you know what, the city's small. It's small, isn't it? I mean, he's like going on and on when the place is about to go up in flames. It's like in a horror movie. When there's people in a dark basement with a bunch of creepy clown toys, and one of them's like, I'll stay here, you guys go to the party. And you're like, no, you idiot, get out of there. It's that. That's what this is. Just this blabbering on. And finally, again, an act of grace. Amazingly, the angels are like, you want to go to a small town? Okay. And they let Lot do it. They let Lot go to this little town. It says, one of the angels said, behold, I grant you this request not to overthrow that particular town that you've spoken about. Hurry, escape there, for I can't do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of that town was called Zoar. And guess what Zoar means? Small. That's what it means. Why was he so intent to go here? Well, the mountain life, that's Abraham's life. Up in the hills, up in Hebron, 3,000 feet of elevation. He wanted to be in a city that was once allied with Sodom, very similar to Sodom. It shows you how much he wanted to stay in that culture. And the angels graciously let him do it. While the sun rose over the earth when Lot came to Zoar, and the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. So this is it. Judgment comes down. And he overthrew these cities. It was a total of 5 cities. And all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. So this is like an apocalyptic cataclysm. Every living thing in this area was utterly destroyed. That's what you're reading there. including plants. So what about this? I mean, you can't just like read something like this and not be deeply troubled that God would move in judgment like this. A couple things. I just want to reflect on this. This is a place called Bab Edra, and it's near the Dead Sea. And it's an ancient settlement that ceased to be occupied at about 2200 or so BC, right around the time of Abraham. And archaeologists have dug here and found a several foot thick ash layer that's very similar to the kind of things we read about in Genesis. Another guy writes, the destruction of charnel houses, this is a vault where they would store bones, at Bab Edra was brought about by the roofs first being set on fire, then collapsing, causing the interiors of the buildings to burn. This is entirely consistent with the biblical description out of the heavens. So the idea that there was some kind of crazy geologic event that utterly obliterated this region, it's, well, go there today. It's a desolate wasteland. And so we've got, you know, this archaeological evidence that this, something like what we're reading about happened. We've got to remember, too, the people of Sodom had seen with their own eyes God deliver them. They had a witness to who God was, and they saw it through God using Abraham to rescue them. They also, you know, depravity in this culture had reached a real tipping point, obviously, with every man in the city, young and old, on the doorstep, looking to gang rape Lot's guests. There is a point, you know, where people can reach, and this can happen to a culture, where it can slide so far that it's not redeemable. And there is something in the Bible, we see it in several places, called temporal judgment. Temporal meaning here and now, this world we live in, God will move in at times in temporal judgment and put an end to evil. You know, I realize a lot of times when we think about judgment, we have a lot of compassion. We think about the people being judged. But that's only half of the story. What about the people that have been victimized for who knows how many centuries by this type of lifestyle? What does this judgment mean to them? You know, for people, you know, all over the place that were being affected by these cultures. Well, that means they're set free from tyranny. They're set free from this kind of abuse, and they're inoculated from the kind of the contagion of this depraved lifestyle. And so, yeah, it's a hard word to hear, but it actually can be redemptive. There's reasons why God's trying to set people free by doing something like this. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is while it's true that God is willing to judge, he also prefers to show mercy. He talks about in that passage in Exodus how he's slow to anger and abounding in loving kindness. There's another place where he talks about not wanting any to perish, but for all to come to him. So this is not God's plan A. This is something he waits to do until there's no other way forward. And that's what we reached with the people of Sodom. So outcomes, let's think about this. You have Abraham, you have Lot. They started in the same place. They started following the same God, but over time their lives diverged. And boy, as you get toward the very end, the end, the terminus of all those decisions, it's quite divergent. Let's think about Abraham real quick. Now, I realize it looks like that guy has business casual clothing there. But that's a very fitting picture, because on the night before Sodom was destroyed, Abraham got wind it was going to happen. And he went out around sunset and had a long talk with God. And during that talk, Abraham was pleading with God to not destroy the people of Sodom. He was what we call interceding. He was going before God on behalf of Lot and the people of the city, pleading with God not to do it. You can read about this. I've kind of summarized it. It's in Genesis 18, 23 to 33, but this is kind of the short version. Abraham tells God, suppose you find 50 righteous people living in Sodom. Surely you wouldn't destroy the righteous along with the wicked. And God says, well, okay, if I find 50 righteous people, I'll spare it. He's like, I can do that. I'll spare the whole city. Abraham shoots back, what about, let's just say there's 45. And God's like, okay, 45, good enough. It's not much different than 50. 45, I'll spare the city for the sake of 45. Abraham's like, how about 40? God's like, fine. Abraham, forgive me, but what about 30? What about 20? What about 10? He almost sounds like an auctioneer. You know, give me 20, give me 20, give me 10, give me 10, whatever. You see, he's like bargaining with God. It's like God's a really terrible haggler. Like, he can't get the outcome he wants. And even as low as 10, God says, okay, for 10 people, I won't destroy the city. I don't think they quite got to 10. But this just shows you, if you feel tension over this story, God feels tension over the story. Abraham and Lot felt tension. Not Lot. Abraham felt tension over the story. I mean, that's a key thing. You know, on the one hand, we've got undeniable human depravity. Something needs to be done. People go to jail for the stuff we read about in Sodom. But on the other hand, we have this theme of God's grace. That God is constitutionally disposed toward moving to you with his love, even knowing how depraved and messed up we all are. And he has to live with that tension. He lets Abraham feel it in this conversation, and you should feel it too. And I think if you're honest, many of us do. We have this sense of culpability, real culpability for hurting people. Who here can say they don't feel that? The sense that I need to be corrected. I have done something wrong. But then coupled with that, we have a real longing to be accepted and loved and forgiven, right? If you can just admit that that's a tension you feel, it's a tension every human feels, just realize in the story of the Bible, this tension is ultimately resolved by God when he sent his own son, Jesus, to die for you. That's why Jesus died. He died to satisfy God's righteous wrath against human depravity so that we could turn and go to God and ask to be forgiven freely based on what Christ has done. Christ bridged this gap. That's the offer that's on the table for you. It's not to work your way to God, but to accept the solution. God will extend his mercy to you if you call out to him and put your faith and trust in Christ to make it possible. That's what we see. And you know, Abraham, that's what he was fighting for in this story. Here's a real poignant scene. The next morning, Abraham got up and he hurried out to the place where he stood in the Lord's presence having that talk. He was like, I want to find out what happened. And he looked across the plain. He watched as columns of smoke rose from the cities like smoke from a furnace. Imagine how he felt. He knew people were down there. He knew Lot and his family were down there. But it concludes and says, God listened to Abraham's request and kept him safe, kept Lot safe, removing him from the disaster that engulfed the cities of the plain. So through Abraham's intercession, Lot and his family were rescued. And this is a picture. What is a life of vital faith? It's us not closing our heart against people in the world that we live in that are being pulled into the depravity that we see all around us. But we stand before God advocating for them and trying to introduce them into a relationship with God. That's what Christians do right there. Lot. Ooh, okay. Lot's outcome. If you thought like having everything you worked for your whole life be burned down in flames was bad, it can actually get worse. And it does get worse. It gets really worse. Lot went up from Zoar. It's interesting. He reached a breaking point. For some reason, he was like, I just can't live this way anymore. And he stayed in the mountains. His two daughters with him, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar, and he stayed in a cave, and he and his two daughters. You know, he got to a point where he wanted to take a step back toward Abraham, a step back toward God, away from his old lifestyle. And he took a step, but he never made it all the way. He stayed suspended between his old life and with Abraham as a God follower and his more recent depraved life in Sodom. He just kind of hovered between those two aspects of his life. It says the firstborn daughter said to the younger, "Our father's old. There's not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of the earth." Okay, so this shows you the scope of this cataclysm. They're like, I don't even know if there's anybody alive anymore in this area. And what kind of solution to being childless would somebody born and raised in Sodom come up with? Well, the daughters say, "Come, let us make our father drink wine and let us lie with him that we may preserve our family through our father." So they made their father drink wine that night. The firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. And the following day, the firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let's make him drunk with wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve our family through our father." So they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him. And he didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both daughters of Lot were with child by their father. Do you think at the beginning of all this, Lot was shooting for being up in a cave, taking his daughter's virginity? You think that was like the pinnacle he was shooting for? Of course not. But this is what happens. There is a cumulative effect of living a life of compromise. Choice by choice, where we could move toward God and his people or away from God, back to depravity. It doesn't happen all at once, but there is an outcome. What a foil, right? He is. You're supposed to be shocked. That's the point of this. It's a shocking contrast with where Abraham ended up. All right, a couple lessons real quick. It's possible to be a true believer but live a life of compromise and defeat. Let me be really clear. All the way through this, I'm not saying that if you pursue depravity as a Christian, you'll lose your salvation. You're going to get to meet Lot in heaven. And I'm sure he can fill in all the parts of the teaching I screwed up. But he was righteous in God's eyes despite this lot. It's possible to live this way. Actually, if you read in 2 Peter 2, it says, Lot was oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men. By what he saw and heard, that righteous man while living among them felt that his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. He was oppressed. That literally means he was worn down by the environment in Sodom. You know, like a teenager wears a parent down wanting to get a cell phone upgrade just over and over again till they have their way. Lot was beaten down by this environment. It says his soul was tormented. If you go on in verse 9, it basically explains he was under constant temptation. It's a miserable place to be. This is a totally miserable place to be. I mean, can you ever remember, on the one hand, when you were far from God, being with people at a party, wanted to just cut loose and completely go for depravity, and you just can't enjoy it because you know you're different, because you know you have a relationship with God? And on the other hand, when you've been around Christians and you're living a double life and you really want to enjoy the quality of fellowship and friendship, you can't do it because you know that half of your life is completely going in a different direction. This really is in a miserable state. And I would just plead with you, if you feel suspended, like Lot was in that cave, between your old life of following God and your more recent life of depravity, don't linger there because it will not end well. It will not end well. It'll be bad. Got to choose your way out of that. Ongoing compromise has a negative effect on the people around us. Think about Lot's wife. You know, he met his wife in Sodom. He apparently never influenced her to follow God. When she was leaving the city, He tried to persuade her to leave, and she did, but it says in verse 26, sorry, the second verse, his wife from behind him looked back, and she was warned to not look back, repeatedly warned, don't look back. She looked back to her old life in Sodom, back to that old lifestyle, and she was instantly turned into a pillar of salt. He had no influence over her. He clearly had no influence over his daughters. He never met the ideal that God wanted for Abraham. In the top verse, God had wanted Abraham to command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord. You think about Abraham's descendants, they weren't perfect. But through his example of faith, they followed a trajectory, followed an arc of honoring and pursuing God. That's one of their legacies, is how they affected the people around them. You know, we did a study a while back in this church. We studied how did the youth in Xenos Christian Fellowship fare as they kind of go through our youth ministries. Which ones are we keeping? Which ones are we losing? And we broke the kids up into three groups. Parents, kids of parents that were not Christians. Kids of parents of nominally involved Christians who were just kind of in and out, not that serious about following God. And then the children of parents who were actively involved. Guess which group was more likely to lose their faith by the time they hit high school? It was these guys. It was the children of nominally involved, compromised Christians. And that makes sense. It's hard to inspire commitment in the people we influence if we're compromised. One last thing, and I've mentioned it. God really does pursue Lot, and he pursues you all the way through this decline that we see. And at any point, I know it feels like the road away from God, it's been a long road, it's been a lot of decisions, a lot of years. But the path back is very short. It was very short for Lot. He knew how to go back to Abraham, back to God's people, back to being in a community of people that believed in God Most High. And he never did it. And I would just urge you, if you're here and you're just like, man, I got some thinking to do, a decision to make. A key piece of finding your way back is getting around people in this room, getting around Christians that you know, and finding your way back to faith together with them. When we try to fly solo, it almost never works out. Father, we're just really grateful that you're always going to be moving toward us, even when we move away from you. And I just thank you that your loving kindness is just kind of a stable thing in our lives. Help us. If somebody here is kind of wavering between two lifestyles, Lord, just strengthen them to choose your way, God.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.